This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Michigan's lawmakers have hit the accelerator pedal in their effort to reform Michigan's no-fault insurance law, the law that provides all victims of catastrophic crashes with a lifetime of unlimited medical benefits. This overhaul would cap the price medical providers could charge for caring for crash victims and would limit the amount of money that would be paid to provide home health care. In return, you would see about $100 savings in your auto insurance for each of 2 years. This package of bills overhauling no-fault insurance zipped right through the Senate and is now before the House. And my next guest has some deep concerns over a tactic the legislature is using to make sure voters cannot challenge this overhaul should it be signed into law. Former Congressman Joe Schwartz is with us. He's also a physician and a former member of the state Senate. Welcome to the program again. Always good to see you.
Thanks very much, Cynthia. Nice to be here.
Well, we've got supporters who point to Michigan's high insurance rates and say it's among the highest in the nation. And then we have critics like doctors and crash victims who say this reform sells out people who could be left severely injured in an auto crash for only about $8 a month for 2 years of savings in auto insurance. What are your views?
Well, MCCA, the Catastrophic Claims Association, has been around since 1978. We're unique in that our level is higher than any state. No state even comes close. I think New Jersey goes to $250,000, mm-hmm. but we're up now to next year $545,000.
So Michigan's the gold standard in this.
Well, it is the gold standard, but for good reasons. It's not without a good and honest reason. And physicians, not only myself, but other physicians to whom I've spoken, who over the years have done a lot of trauma care and have patients to this day who are being cared for by MCCA funds, say, whoa, you can't stop this. We are now able to save a lot of people who 35, 40 years ago you couldn't save. Yes, they end up being quadriplegic and paraplegic, or they end up with the long-term problems they have with closed head injuries. But nevertheless, we save their lives, and that is, in fact, what we should do. It's costly, and MCCA takes care of that cost over and above now the limit of $545,000 that the regular auto insurance will pay. MCCA is, interestingly enough, even though it's a statutory organization, mm-hmm. is a 501c3. It's a nonprofit that was set up. It has a board of directors appointed by the insurance commissioner. That board is from five different companies that write auto insurance, five of the biggest ones, like AAA and auto owners and Citizens and Farmers and State Farm. And I think over the years they've done an excellent job. There is now $18 billion sitting in the coffers of MCCA. One wonders, and I think not without reason, what's going to happen to that money if MCCA goes away. The legislature has an alternative, and I've looked mm-hmm. at the alternative. It's not a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking this through. But the problem is sometimes you have something that really works. Yes, unique from other states, but works. And maybe we should think twice or three times or four times before we get rid of it. And the idea that Michigan's high auto insurance rates are somehow due in, I think, an inordinate amount to MCCA is not correct. Michigan's high auto insurance rates are due to Detroit. You know, other areas in the state as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if only 50% or fewer of the vehicles in Detroit are insured, those who have insurance, probably a minority of auto owners in Detroit, are paying an inordinately high rate. Mayor Duggan wants to do something about it. He's proposed Detroit insurance, where the level, instead of $545,000, I believe he's thought about $250,000 mm-hmm. coverage for people with these horrible injuries. I mean, people are thinking about it, and I give Mayor Duggan a lot of credit. But the danger is that the legislature, in its rush to do something about this, will somehow take MCCA away and replace it with something that in no way, shape, or form really is a replacement, is not good public policy. It's still got one house to go through before it passes, and I'm not sure, even if it gets to Governor Snyder's desk, that he would sign it. So it's something for us to think about.
It's something that we've seen now as this has been sped through the Senate and now it's before the House, is something that's been put into that bill, which is an appropriation, which in essence shuts out any citizens who might want to challenge it in the future.
Yeah, that's a that's a little known caveat. It's constitutional that the legislature has used from time to time over the years, where if there is an appropriation of $2,500 or more in any bill, you cannot do a referendum on that bill. A citizen's referendum cannot be done.
And there's a point to that within the Constitution, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a point to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's supposed to be for not necessarily wolf hunting bills or the right to work
bill.
No, you don't.
Well, you don't want people to try to, if the legislature has worked very, very hard to come up with an appropriations bill, and it's been difficult and there's been a lot of give and take.
Yeah.
And by golly, finally we have
something. Here it is.
An appropriations bill, and it's the best we can do. But you have some dissidents out there that say, "Oh no, we're gonna do a referendum on this. We don't like this appropriations bill." That particular little codicil was passed for that reason, that you can't have a referendum on everything.
Mm-hmm.
However, to stick a $2,500 appropriation for anything on a bill that may be somewhat controversial, to protect that bill from any sort of citizen referendum is not good public policy, and that's not what that particular caveat was meant to do in the first place.
In fact, we might remember that the emergency manager bill that passed in 2011 did not have an appropriation, and voters overturned it in 2012, and then the legislature rewrote that bill with that appropriation, zipped it right through lame duck. So now there's nothing that people can do. And as we were saying, we've seen preemptive appropriations in bills about redistricting, about the wolf hunt, and right to work. What is this saying, do you think, to the voters of Michigan? What are lawmakers who do this saying to voters?
I don't think they're trying to say anything that's offensive. Mm. I mean, I don't think they're saying, we're the legislature, leave us alone. We know all and you don't know anything.
But it could be seen to look like
that. Oh, it
like
can
that.
Be.
Yeah.
It can be. I don't think that's their intent.
What do you think
what they need to realize outside of Lansing, which is, you know, six square blocks surrounded by reality, that it doesn't look good when you do that, and you really sell yourself short when you do that. So using this appropriation loophole, shall we say,
yes,
is not the right thing to do, sends the wrong message, makes people mad as hell, and you come up a loser, not a winner. So I don't think that particular, I'll say it, a codicil to the Constitution and added to the bill as a codicil should be used except in instances where you've done the best you can do. This is a terribly important bill. It is, in fact, an appropriations bill. Let's please get it through.
Right. So what, if anything, can citizens who look at this, as you say, people can get mad as hell over this, what's to be done about this tactic?
Well, the only thing can be done about it is amend the Constitution. That particular part of the Constitution would have to be repealed. Now, quite frankly, that's not going to happen. So, you know, what you do is you watch. If the legislature is using that tactic and you believe it is inappropriate that they're doing so, call them on it. Call them out. Say, you can't do that. It's unlikely that there'll be a referendum on this issue, but nevertheless, don't take that option away from the people. And that's what is being done every time you see a little appropriation stuck on a bill that's not an appropriations bill.
Can I ask, would it be fair for a voter to wonder whether they're going to get an open-minded listen from a legislator when they are doing that, knowing exactly what's happening, which is shutting out voters from the right to challenge?
I think most legislators are willing to listen. I think the intentions of almost all legislators are good. They want to do the best they can. We are paying the price now for something called term limits, where you have a terribly inexperienced legislature, and we'll have, as long as we have term limits, especially in the House. It takes a long time to learn how the wheels of government turn. You're dealing with a $53, $54 billion total budget, and you have newbies doing it. And it's very, very difficult. It's difficult for them. I'm not criticizing them. Mm-hmm. It's difficult for them to be airdropped into that situation. In the day, which is easy for me to say in the day, but in the day, when we first came to the legislature, there were people in the legislature who could act as teachers.
Mentors,
to us. They could mentor us. They could say, here's what we need to do. Here's what we shouldn't do. And there were always those people there. Nobody stayed around for a real long time, which is the reason term limits were passed. I chaired the study group on term limits by a very national legislative group. What I found, and Michigan was a good example, the average stay in the Michigan House at that time, preterm limits was less than 7 years, and the average stay in the Michigan Senate preterm limits was just slightly more than 7 years. So we passed term limits, by the way, funded by out-of-state money, a constitutional amendment that we truly didn't need. 23 states had term limits at one time. It's now down to 15. 8 have repealed.
Is there anything you're seeing in Michigan that would lead one to think that a repeal movement could take root and grow?
I think the only way it can be repealed is through the courts. The term limits has a certain appeal. They, you know, throw the bums out. They're not doing the job. New blood. We need new blood.
There's even talk of make it part-time.
That strikes a responsive chord. Mm. I think it's unlikely that it would be done by referendum. I think it could be done through the courts, saying you do not have the right constitutionally. I have the right to run for an office, and it makes no difference if I've served 3 terms of the House. I would like to run for another term. It is my constitutional right to do so. Ultimately, I think that's what will happen.
Ultimately.
Yeah, I define ultimately. I can't.
Then in the meantime, I wonder what your thoughts are with what this kind of climate does to people feeling engaged with their representatives and feeling like they are heard and that they have a voice, or does it lend people to go, they're going to do what they're going to do?
I think people feel that they're heard, and legislators try to hear. The legislators are not shutting themselves off, I don't think. By and large, every member of the legislature is a good person, or they wouldn't have run for office. It's hard to run for office now. You subject yourself to all kinds of abuse, and unfortunately, your family to all kinds of abuse as well. People say horrible things about you, again, usually funded by money that didn't come in from your district, from here and there and everywhere. So they do the best they can do. But what I'm saying is that experience counts. Would you be operated on by an inexperienced surgeon? No. Would you like to be defended in a serious court case by an inexperienced attorney? Would you like your home or your business designed by a terribly inexperienced architect? So why in the world do we tolerate a legislative body that spends $53 billion public dollars every year to be manned and womaned by people with not a lot of experience? And they would be the first people to admit they don't have that experience and that it's been difficult for them. And they'd be the first people to say, you know, I've been here now 6 years in the House, and I'm really kind of just starting to learn how it happens. And now I'm gone. It's not a good situation.
Former Congressman Joe Schwartz, also former state senator and physician. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Cynthia, thanks very much. Nice to be with you.